Welcome to the October 18th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. A couple of preliminaries I like to always take care of and remind people that if there's an emergency, the exits are to my right at the back of the room and to my left at the front of the room. In the case of a fire, please don't use the elevator. If you have electronic devices, cell phones, or other things that make noise, please silence them. Would you stand with me, please, and pledge allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call, please?
Ms. Kellis? Here. Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne? Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
Oh, I don't have another language. EC?
Mr. Dennis?
I'm here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
We have 12 members present.
We have quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
We will be having an executive session on matters this evening. They'll be on personnel issues. They will be on potential land purchase and on contract negotiation. We'll probably go into executive session, and when we come out, we do not intend to take action. Let's go to privilege of the floor for the public. This is the opportunity that members of the public have to speak to us at our meeting, and we would ask them to sign one of these blue cards if they haven't already and pass it up. By signing the blue card, you're agreeing to be allowed to speak and using our rules. You're agreeing not to raise your voice. You're agreeing to the three-minute time limit. You're agreeing not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You're agreeing not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. You agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. We have microphones on both sides of the room, so we're going to start this evening with Kirby Edmonds, and then we're going to have Charles Geisler.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm here to speak about the Office of Human Rights, and I have three things I want to say. The first is to Mr. Dennis, just my sincere thanks for changing the rules for the budget meeting last week so that the public could speak. The second is, while I understand that the amendment suggesting defunding the Office of Human Rights has been withdrawn, I just want to say, should it be reintroduced, I'm hoping that and trusting that a majority of you would reject such an amendment for two compelling reasons, in my opinion. One is that given the housing crisis in the county, both the opportunity and the incentive to discriminate increases, and maintaining any kind of protections for people who are most likely to be discriminated in housing seems very important to me, and at this point the office is at least able to offer advice and resources to people who may want to file complaints for discrimination. The second is that my understanding is that the office is, as we speak, in negotiations with the Division of Human Rights to restore its capacity to both do intakes and investigations on behalf of the Office of Human Rights, and were it not to exist, while that process might not cease, it would take a lot longer. And the third thing that I just want to say is for Mr. Sigler, last week you suggested that you were interested in opening a dialogue. This process is not a dialogue, and it's a fine process, but it's not a dialogue. And I would just suggest that if that's really what you want, that you have staff in the county that are quite expert in managing community dialogues. This is actually quite an important one, not just around the office, but around the role of both the legislature and all of us in preserving and educating people about human rights. And I, for one, would be very happy to participate in any dialogue you all organize. Thank you.
Thank you. I forgot to mention that we have a countdown clock to my left over there for the show to 3 minutes. And at the end of that time, if you're still speaking, you will hear an audible signal, and we ask you to conclude at that point. Let's go to Charles Geisler and then Edward Kopko.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
I'm Charles Geisler, a resident of the county, and I want to speak about something that's worrying me a great deal, and it has to do with equal protection of civil rights, actually, more broadly, human rights in the county. I feel exceedingly privileged to live in Tompkins County. I think our protections are really quite wonderful. We have a good civil rights law. We have bodies that protect them and advisory committees to monitor and follow up. On the other hand, I may feel this way because I'm white, heterosexual, male, older, and reasonably well off. And when I talk to my gay and lesbian friends and associates and daughter, who's gay, I don't get the same impression. They are apprehensive. And that's why I decided I would come today and talk. And I hope this issue is discussed at length and in more than one meeting. Essentially, my daughter would like, when she's done with her education, to return to Tompkins County to begin a business, a bed and breakfast. She's worried that she won't be able to get credit, that if she's harassed or the subject of profiling, things like this, which the gay community is legitimately concerned about. There are instances of this. There are videotapes of it in debates. I think you folks know about this, not debates, interviews with people from our law enforcement agency. This is of great concern to her and obvious to me as part of her family. I think that the opportunity for there to be training of our first responders and our law enforcement agencies is wide open. It's being done all around the country. These issues, not just for the gay and lesbian community, but obviously for other minorities, is very much in the news, including today, a very significant moment. We really need to act, and I think the LGBT community would do a spectacular job of shouldering the responsibility of doing that training. I also think we should have a liaison person in the sheriff's office to represent rainbow culture that thrives in Tompkins County. I guess bottom line is what I'm saying is I don't want to be the exception. I want to be the rule, and there shouldn't be exceptions when the civil rights are at stake. Thanks.
Thank you. Ed Kopko. Ed Joanne Sopola-Dennis.
Yes, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ed Kopko. I want to thank you for your good work on behalf of our community. I speak on a similar vein with this gentleman on behalf of the gay and lesbian community. And I have two respectful suggestions for you as you consider this issue of funding and a liaison. The first submission that I have for you is a publication entitled Discrimination and Harassment by Law Enforcement Officers in the LGBT Community. Law enforcement agencies are generally very conservative and intransigent. And in my experience, they need our help in making systemic changes the way they approach social problems. The documents that I have here for you this evening demonstrate how New York City addressed the problem of harassment and discrimination in this segment of our population with very detailed instructions and changes to the patrol manual. And in those changes, it suggests that, actually not suggests, it directs the police officers who are meeting these individuals on the streets to approach them in a very particular, respectful, honorable manner so that they always maintain their dignity. So I have these suggestions for you and respectfully request that you consider them as you entertain this item about a liaison. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Joanne Cipolla-Dennis and then Sherry Cortez. If anyone else wants to speak, please send up a card.
Good evening, legislature. Thank you for the opportunity to bring forward perspectives that are not often voiced, so our entire community is served. And thank you for the gentleman who spoke. Thanks for the safe zone cards. It makes a difference. It means we live here, too. I moved here in 2007 with my then-girlfriend to escape the community I grew up in. It's a town that had no interest in becoming a welcoming community where a happy same-gender couple can live openly. At that time, it was presumably still. The local government was all male-dominated and very conservative. We got the message that gay, lesbian, transgender, and gender nonconforming people were not welcome. That homophobia and feeling of exclusion caused me to have significant depression, and we saw a better life moving to Ithaca and Tompkins County to Dryden. It's far better here. However, we have more to do to make this community a thriving place for everyone to enjoy. One area that can be improved is public safety. If you came to the vigil on the Commons after the Orlando killings, you heard young LGBTQ speakers reference their fears, which included concerns about police. I understand that you are contemplating making the sheriff's position a hired position instead of elected. I support this change and encourage you to ensure that the person you hire brings to that position is trained and experienced in working to resolve existing safety concerns for LGBTQs here. Especially those of color, those with disabilities, and a lot of us live with post-traumatic stress disorder, so we have to have that understanding, as well as poverty and addiction. Elected officials, organizations getting county funding, and especially those charged with our public safety, need to be trained to accommodate the needs of the LGBTQ community and those of color. That is consistent with the county's inclusion policy, which I thank Leslie McBean for all her many years of work for doing that. It would be easier for residents to be able to go to one place if we have issues with public employees or policies. It seems that it would be more efficient for consolidation for this function to happen at the Human Rights Office. So county officials and employees should not be excluded from those proceedings. We also need training for public service officers and employees on effective de-escalation methods of creating safer spaces where marginalized people can feel that they are being heard. There are several people in our community that are assisting, and thanks to Luca Mora and Brian Pachowski for starting that effort now. The March 215 Williams College study that I have up in Mr. Koch's reference is being submitted. Please read that. It's very, very important that our police officers have an understanding of the history between them and the gay community. Younger officers don't have that yet because they haven't lived through that. So if we can have conversations in a safe environment, I think that it could be a win-win all the way across the board, and this community could be a very thriving community for all of us. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. The last one I have is Sherry Cortheis. Last call if anybody wants to send up a blue card.
Hi, I'm Sherry Cortheis, and I live in downtown Ithaca, and I'm here to speak, I think, deja vu again against this jail expansion. I know that you formed a jail task committee, which I really appreciate. But it looks like reading the minutes from their first meeting, that we're going to do another draft RSP to study the criminal justice and jail population. And then it also sounds to me like they're wanting to expand it to where we have the open concept of direct supervision, which means it's like 24-hour surveillance. So, I mean, and if you think that's going to be a rehab facility, and then there's, it's with guards, it's not with physicians like a rehab facility would have. But I want to get a jump on this because $19 to $20 million is a lot of money. It doesn't solve our drug problem. Putting people in jail will never solve the drug problem. The drug problem is much deeper than that. Our mayor has this Ithaca plan that he's introduced that solves a lot of our problems as far as sending people to jail and punishing them. We want to help them. It's the do no harm. And I really think that that's something we should think about, and at the county level also, and then community policing. I receive this at the, when I go to the police department, I pick this up. And community policing, we don't need the weapons, we don't need all the spy equipment. And as long as the justice system is locking up minorities and low-income people, and the wealthy have a different justice system, we can't continue to build jails to put poor people into these jails. They are not. You know, we had the guy in Danby that killed himself because he didn't want to go back to jail. He was that afraid of it. And to me, if somebody's that afraid of it, and then let's talk about the profit, because Aramark runs the food service, but I believe it's Sodexo who runs the commissary. So when they go into that facility, well, this new facility, if you guys, whatever happens with it, but will they have to buy everything, all their underwear, their T-shirts, their Raymond noodle at 94 cents a pack, trial size of tube toothpaste for $3.50. If you want to put money in the vending machine, if you want to give your family member money, it goes through a machine that takes $3 off. These are poor people that don't have the money to get out of jail. And so the whole system, I just don't know. I just would like you guys to think, again, we're all human beings. Is that the right way to solve our drug issue in Ithaca? I don't think it is. I think the jail expansion is a big mistake. The state's trying to do it because they're trying to shut the private prisons down, move them to the state jail level, and expand those. But thank you so much for your time. Please think about this issue.
Thank you for your comments. All right, let's move on. We're going to move to a privilege of the floor for municipal officials. I see two. Is there more? In the back corner. They always seem to hide in the back corner. Who wants to go first? Dr. Nguyen from the City Council, Ithaca City Council.
Sorry, I'm going to be super quick. I have to go to a budget meeting. But McGuire came through the Planning and Economic Development Committee, and we recommended that, we passed a resolution that basically states that it is not in conformance to our comprehensive plan, and the Common Council will vote on that, whether or not to proceed with them, with McGuire on November 2nd at our normal meeting. We are starting our budget process, and I guess the last update I'll give for interested residents of the city is that we were given $2 million from the state to do dredging of Cascade Creek, and we were waiting for other state action from the DEC to proceed with inlet dredging, but we're looking into proceeding with dredging Six Mile Creek and Cascade Creek without, you know, waiting for the DEC to move. So it's a point of interest for many people who are dealing with flooding issues whenever it rains hard or during the ice dams from a couple of winters ago. But that's it.
Have any questions? Do we want to talk to Duxon tonight? Thank you for your report. We have Deborah Sepola-Dennis from the Dryden Town Board.
Hello, everybody. Sorry I wasn't here last month. I had a budget meeting last month that conflicted with this one. We are also in our budget process, and we have another meeting, hopefully our final meeting tomorrow night, where we are finalizing the draft, and we'll be having a hearing on that in November. As you guys know, it's a very challenging process, and we're trying to balance the reduction in sales tax and the tax cap and all of that stuff. So trying to get through it, and hopefully we will get through it in the next few weeks. On October 5th, the town board approved with conditions a concept plan for a planned unit development in Varna at 1061 Dryden Road. That is a 36-unit townhouse project. It's in the concept stage, and they have, I think, I'm not sure exactly how long, but they have a few months to come back to us with the design to move on to the design stage. Our rail trail task force has continued to work on getting easements, and they now have the majority of the easements that are needed for the trail to go between Dryden and Freeville, so that's going to be moving forward. The town will be holding a hearing on signing those easements in November. And the town has also applied for a Department of Transportation grant to support the work on the trail. So there's great progress being made on the trail at this time. Also, we have a new playground system that's been installed at Montgomery Park in the village of Dryden. It's really beautiful, and if you guys get a chance to go by and see it, it is amazing. And it was all done with volunteers. It took about 2 weeks. There were 10 days of intense work going on with just a whole swarm of volunteers putting this thing together, and it just came out wonderful. That is the first stage of revitalization project for Montgomery Park. We'll also be resurfacing the basketball courts and the skate park there. Unfortunately, our recreation director resigned in September, and so we'll be conducting a new search for a director in the next few weeks. And we have a draft law that we'll be considering in November to allow for solar farms. That's coming up. And we also have a few positions open on our boards. We have two alternate positions open on our planning board, and two positions open on our Recreation and Youth Commission as well. And if anyone out there in cyber world is listening and they're interested in getting involved in the Dryden community, we'd really love for you to apply for those positions. Any questions?
Anna.
Just one quick question. I'm glad to hear about the Varna development for the townhouses. Can you tell us a little bit of, like, who it is? And are they considering any kind of sustainability measures in the development? Can you give us a sense of that?
Right. So they're only in the concept phase right now. We did bring that up while we were talking about the design for the planned unit development. And they are open to looking at different sustainability designs, net zero and passive house design. Also looking at using air source heat pumps. And we told them that at the design phase, we would encourage them to site the buildings to be solar ready or have some sort of plan of using community solar or something along those lines, and they were willing to look into that. The developer is Gary Sloan, and he's working with Holt Architect.
And that's in line with your comprehensive plan, the guidelines
yes.
you're using.
Yes.
Rich John.
I just wanted to say it's great to hear about the trails. I know that Dryden is putting a real emphasis on this, and that's just a wonderful thing.
Thank you.
And I go to their meetings when I can, but to hear the news that they now have a majority of the easements, I hadn't heard that before tonight.
Yes.
The work that committee is doing is just exemplary.
It is. It really is. We're very excited. Thank you.
Thank you. I suppose legislators want to have a chance. Who'd like to speak first? Martha.
Before Deborah goes, I also want to point out that on our agenda tonight is the next step in the Game Farm Road Bridge redo and the supplemental contract that the new bridge is going to be high enough, and they're planning it so that the eastern end of the walkway that goes on the Town of Ithaca walkway there could connect to the Varna Trail, so they go under the new bridge, so that that's another link in the chain, so I'm pleased to hear that. What I mostly wanted to talk about tonight was, oh, guess what, housing. It seems something's in the water, that there are a lot of projects that are coming to votes at the local boards, and I believe that there's been quite a bit of confusion about, do we need the housing? There seems to be a lot of construction around, and whether that's hotels or anything else, or actually housing, a lot of people think that, oh, we're done. You know, we've got enough housing. The county's needs assessment has been substantially finished. The public presentation was on September 6th. However many people got to that meeting or not, the information is on the county planning's website. But I'm going to maybe take a little bit of time from, you know, maybe in each one of these meetings just to pull out a piece of information to make sure people are aware of what's going on. People can't see this, but it's a table showing the market rate apartments existing versus the target inventory. And if anybody can see, so we've got three-bedroom apartments, two-bedroom apartments, one-bedroom, and studios. The really big line there, the big red line is the need that we have, and the blue line is the number that we actually have. So the big red line is the need, more than twice as big as what we actually have. The numbers are, for two-bedroom apartments, roughly 2,398 is the target inventory. That's the need. Current need for non-student apartments in this county, 2,400, and then what we have is 1,000. The gap there is almost 1,400. One-bedroom apartments, the need is 1,229, and the supply is 811. That's a gap of 418. And legislators, all this is in your mailboxes. Kathy printed. I emailed it to you today, and at Carol's suggestion, Kathy Covert printed these. So that gap is 1,800. 1,800 right now need for one- and two-bedroom market-rate apartments, not student apartments. 1,800. So when we think about what seem like big projects, like on Bomax Drive, 140. The old library, 57. I mean, these may seem like big, but they're just a drop in the bucket on our need. And if we don't meet the need, what happens is the people have to drive from farther and farther away. We have more in commuters than we've ever had before. And, you know, this is so just, and this is what's kind of driving the need for a housing summit, so it can really bring people together and talk about this, so people will understand that the gap is real and has major consequences for all income levels of folks, consequences for people who would like to live here but can't, people who would like to live closer into their jobs but have to live, you know, a half an hour out in the outskirts of the county. So that's the real gap, more than 1,800, one- and two-bedroom apartments right now, not counting any growth that might happen. Just wanted to put that out there.
Carol Chalk.
Thanks, Mike. I had a couple of things tonight. I wanted to take a minute to remember Krista Bissell. The obituary was in the paper today. She died at 65. And information, further information is in there. Many of us knew Krista as a realtor, and she would come to us here as a realtor and talk about some things that affected her that way. She was an award-winning realtor, multiple awards from the Board of Realtors, the Housing Opportunity Awards, Good Neighbor Awards. Less known was her work as a realtor in support of housing opportunities for all segments of our community, you know, even in to work towards additional housing solutions for people where realtors wouldn't necessarily be getting a commission. And that doesn't always happen, so it's her efforts in that regard really stood out. The other context in which we knew her here was as a community activist and volunteer. She was very active with the Pine Tree Road neighborhood in a way that was she knew how to be effective and to help the neighborhood to be effective in figuring out what are their potential points of impact as they worked with the DOT, the New York State DOT, for example, on the speed limits in front of their properties in that segment of the community. And she came here when we were talking about Pine Tree Road and the trail that we wanted to build there and the bridge changes. And while we didn't always agree, she was incredibly active and effective in understanding how to work with us and encouraging the rest of the neighborhood to keep the lines of communication open in a thoughtful and information-based way. So I really appreciated that about her. There are many other things one can say, but my heart goes out. I encourage you to look at the rest of the obituary. My heart goes out to her daughter, Dana Kingsbury, and the rest of her family. I also wanted to, on the other end of the spectrum kind of note, and world note, I wanted to recognize the latest recipient of the Nobel Prize in Literature, which many of you may have read, is Bob Dylan this year. There are many quotes one could find, that we could find, maybe Dan already has, from his songs. But one of my favorite things that he used to say doesn't come from a song, and I'm not even sure if it's something that he said or was quoting. There's some dispute as to whether this quote came from Cicero. But he was fond in interviews of saying that a library is an arsenal of liberty, in talking about the many, many ways that he used libraries and thought they were incredible resources for their communities. I urge the critics. There are critics out there. We don't have, well, why a songwriter? And I do urge people and people who've never truly listened to his music to go and listen. Listen with the lyrics in front of you, because they can be hard to hear. And if you need help finding the lyrics, I would urge you to go ask a librarian to help you find them. And then third, I appreciate the people who've come out to speak to us tonight in their suggestions about ways they'd like to see us continue to move forward to improve understanding and communication with the LGBTQ community. And I learned some things today in asking about that and sort of where our program stood. I appreciate those of you from the county, Amy, Joe, Leslyn got back to me, who got back. And I don't know if now's a good time. I know we could ask you either now or, well, later. WDIC could do it, or Joe could do it in his report, or we could just take a minute now before people may not stay, the ones who came to hear us and talk to us. So I was pleasantly surprised to hear that our training efforts are moving forward. So thank you to staff. And do we want to take a minute for Joe or somebody to do that now? Or is that totally out of order?
Well, let's come back to that, okay. Shall we? Anyone else want to speak on privilege of the floor? Peter Stein.
Just one quick comment to follow up what Carol just said. I happened to be watching the news about half an hour ago, three quarters of an hour ago. It turns out Bob Dylan is really one of a kind. He has not responded. You have to accept the Nobel Prize. It's $1 million or so, and he has not responded. And it said they don't know quite what to do about that. He has not accepted it.
Put it in the bank.
Come on.
Give it away. We'll take it.
Anna Kellis.
Our library could use it.
I actually just wanted to add one small piece to what Carol was saying. And for anybody who wants to honor Krista Bissell, her daughter, the night before she passed, played the song Ladies of the Canyon by Joni Mitchell. So if you want to just take a moment and listen to that song tonight, that's another way to honor her.
Thank you. Leslyn McBean Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, here I go again, opening my big mouth. I heard on the news, it might have been this morning or yesterday morning, about an encounter that our deputies or sheriff's deputies had with a resident that could have ended in a worse way than it ended. And I kind of want to speak to that issue because throughout this country, we have been dealing with so many issues of the violation of people's civil rights and so many dead black men in our community because our, I'm just saying what's on the surface, I don't know all the details, our law enforcement folks felt threatened. And the presumption of threats seems to be what drives fatal action that ends up with our black men being shot down. And so we have this movement, Black Lives Matter, and a lot of people want to take that into All Lives Matter. Our deputies, based on what I heard in the news, let me just put it that way, describe a situation of someone who was violent towards them, who kept his hand in his pocket, according to them, all the time, who threatened to shoot them. And he's still alive. They did not react with the same actions and on the same premise that we felt threatened, so we shot and we killed. Again, I don't know all the details, but I do want to say a gentleman is still alive, albeit he's a white gentleman. I hope the same can happen for others who are in marginalized communities, and that in our community, we don't face what we've been facing nationwide. Often our deputies don't necessarily do the right thing by everyone. But this is a place where I felt like they really tried, despite the fact that they actually felt threatened. And I hope that others throughout our community, throughout our nation, and I know many others are doing the right thing, will continue to model these kinds of behaviors, trying to de-escalate a situation, certainly not putting your life in danger, but trying your best to de-escalate and not having the first response be that you reach for your gun and you shoot someone and kill them. So I just wanted, again, me and my big mouth, I just wanted to sort of bring that and say thanks to whoever the deputies or that responded to that particular incident. I saw Dooley and I saw Dan on Saturday night at a production at Cornell University Schwartz Center by a gentleman named Gregory Bright, and I had an opportunity to talk to him after the show. And thank you, Sherry, for talking. She's gone about jails and the expansion. We've been engaged in this community in reading and dialoguing around the new Jim Crow book by Michelle Alexander. And again, I put a plug in to all of you to please read it. Please try to come to the events. Please engage in dialogue with your neighbors, your friends, anyone around this. The name of the production was Never Fight a Shark in Water. Wrongful conviction of Gregory Bright. Seeing the report by the Municipal Courts Task Force, reading the new Jim Crow, and attending this event where this gentleman, at a very young age, teenage, was convicted and sent to prison for murder in New Orleans, spent 27 and a half years in Angola, and after 27 and a half years was exonerated. He was convicted, he was innocent, he did not, could not possibly have committed it because of all kinds of things, but evidence not introduced, so many things that went wrong with this case, and people for their own political benefit taking actions that they should not have taken because you want to have a certain number of convictions under your belt. So as I look around, I saw Ed here earlier and, you know, folks who were running for DA and or judges, to just think about what one does to somebody's life. 27 and a half years later, teaching himself to read and basically fighting his own case. I'm thankful that we have a assigned counsel system because he talks about his, what's the other one?
Public defender.
Public defender, who only met him a half an hour before his court session, long enough to just to get to know his name. I think of all these things as we try to move forward and be a model county and try to work towards protecting and preserving people's human and civil rights. Now, this was a very powerful piece. I tie it in to the new Jim Crow and really do plug, please read the book. If you're not a reader, they have it on audiobook. Stick it in your car thing, listen to it. And I also want to put in a plug for a documentary on Netflix called 13th. Please take a look at it. I hope as we, it's part for me, it's part of training for all of us that we, you don't have to necessarily go to a formalized training, but this might be something that you can watch in the privacy of your own home and be educated and come out on the other side with different knowledge and hopefully be able to engage in dialogue with someone who can help shed light even more. So I just wanted to share those two things. I think they are extremely, extremely important in our community.
Thanks. Anyone else? All right, here's what I'd like to do then. We have a presentation tonight It's been scheduled on the Tompkins County Municipal Courts Task Force. And then I want to, after that, I want to go right to the budget, because I think there's a lot of folks here that would like to hear about budget. So first off, Ray Schlauder is here. Joe, do you want to introduce this?
I'd be happy to do that, Mike. And we've kept this body aware of what's going on with the Municipal Courts Task Force since it was created. It was created now well over a year ago by TCOG as a part of originally a shared service initiative, where at one time, you recall, the governor was encouraging local governments to look at shared services at virtually every level. The TCOG members decided that it was kind of an unusual suggestion. We had to look at the municipal courts, and we had to take a look to see if there are ways not only to improve efficiency, although there are always benefits of efficiency, but also the consistent quality of justice that can be provided in the justice courts, the town and village courts. TCOG asked a group of what turned out to be extraordinarily dedicated leading citizens in this community to sit on the task force to take a look at the municipal courts, and they were chaired by Ray Schlauder, and I'm sure he'll introduce the other members of the group. But when I say dedicated, this is a group that came together once every couple of weeks, Ray, for a solid year,
every other week.
Every other week, 24, 25
you hear me?
Times.
Is this, yes. Does that work? We're clear? Yep. All right, good.
And went very deep into the topic. And in the end, have issued a report that all of you now have, both electronically and in hard copy. Anybody who's watching on TV can access through the county's webpage. But it's an important report, and we wanted to make sure that you heard it directly from the chair himself, who can summarize what's in here with the notion that when it's done, when Ray is done, and when TCOG has taken its action to endorse this report, there are action steps that we need to do to make sure that we realize some of the improvements that have been recommended here. So with that probably too long preamble, if I can introduce Ray Schlauder, who I think all of you know, who was the chair of the task force.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you, folks. And before I actually get into this, I just want to thank all of you for your service. It is extraordinary to watch folks coming from all aspects of life, from all callings and all backgrounds, and to absorb what the community is concerned about and to react to it and to give it serious consideration. And I really appreciate it. And just sitting here for the past 45 minutes has been useful just to remind myself of all the work you folks do. So thank you very much. To say that the task force was distinguished, I think, is near unanimous, but for the chair. I think everybody else had honorifics, and they were well recognized, and they certainly have done well for this community. I have three areas that I'm going to touch on. I'm not sure how much time I have, but I know you guys have a busy night, so I'm going to do it as quickly but also as clearly as possible. So the three areas, first of all, I'm going to thank some of the members. Secondly, I'm going to talk about the report in its methodology and to describe substantively what some of the things are. And then thirdly, I'm just going to highlight that which I think should be acted on and hopefully will get your attention. And I will revisit some of these issues as I go along. The challenge, as you perhaps know, the challenge was huge. The challenge was how to sustain and improve the delivery of justice in our local courts, both and to make recommendations both in terms of efficiency and in terms of quality. So it's a big, large challenge, lots of words. But fortunately, we had some very good help from a lot of people. And the folks on the committee itself, we had three town justices. We had Justice Glenn Galbraith, City Court Judge Scott Miller, and Enfield Town Justice Betty Poole. We had two town supervisors, Jason Leifer and Liz Thomas, and earlier Marianne Sumner until she resigned. And we had the former district attorney, Gwen Wilkinson. We had Mark Solomon, who's a known lawyer here in town, and longtime community activist, and then we had myself as chair. The group met every other week for the better part of a year, in fact, more than a year. We listened to dozens of witnesses. We reviewed literally dozens of reports and documents, received lots of correspondence, heard from many, many people who came and spoke to us, and most prominently, folks, town justices visited us several times, lawyers, law enforcement, and representatives of a number of the constituencies that were affected. I would like to give special acknowledgement to Joe. Joe Mariana was extremely not only supportive but helpful and undertook a very real behind-the-scenes leadership of this group, and we wouldn't be where we are without him. I would also like to thank Marcia Lynch for her constancy. But there are two other people that I would like to acknowledge. One is sitting here in chambers, your chair. Michael Lane was at every single meeting, and he paid attention, and he spoke often. And this was of deep concern to him, and it was evident. And the other is a town justice by the name of William Chernish. William Chernish is a Newfield town justice, again, virtually at every meeting, very, very observant, very helpful, and I think did a great job in representing the interests of town justices. The other person I would mention is Julia Hughes from assigned counsel, Lance Salisbury, also from assigned counsel. These are folks who clearly represent the best of indigent defense in this community, and in contrast to what Leslin was talking about in Louisiana, we are lucky that we have such assiduous and such professional, competent representation in this community. All of that being said, I just want to quickly describe the report. You have it. I would urge you to read it. I know that it's lengthy. It's 56 pages. There are, but if that's daunting, there are probably almost 1,000 pages of appendices material. So be glad there's only 56. But if you can't do that, at least do the USA Today version or the Bob Dylan version and read the executive summary. I'll take issue with Bob Dylan in another forum. as much as I love him,
listen,
but
listen.
Not a good choice. Disservice to literature. In any event, we do have in this report changes that can be made now at the county level and with the good offices of the county. Changes that can be made, operational changes that can be made now with the cooperation of the village and town courts. And then we have suggested some what I call the long-term aspirational changes. All of this is in the executive summary. It's only 3 pages, and you can read it while I'm talking. I won't be upset. The highlights of the report, and I'm just going to kind of address them and then sit down. The highlights of the report, I think the most prominent is at the county level, it's the establishment of a DWI part. A DWI part means that we will have, and this can be done, we will have a countywide misdemeanor and violation level part of court that will handle all DWI cases, much in the same way that is now done in the city of Ithaca. You will note from the statistics in the report that there are, on average, about 300 to 350, 325 to 350 DWI cases a year throughout the county. About a third of those are already being handled in the city court. The other two-thirds are in the towns and village courts. What we learned is that there is both a burden on the towns and village courts as well as some level of unevenness in the delivery of justice. And our point here is, and it's all set out in the report, the rationale is there, but to set up a countywide DWI part, and I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. The countywide DWI part not only can be a model for this county but other counties, but it also can pave the way, at least for some of us on the task force, who are truly interested in trying to establish not just a DWI part but a misdemeanor level court for all the county, a single court, but that is aspirational. But the countywide DWI part does have the consensus support, unanimous, I believe, of the task force. It's doable. It takes a little bit it's complicated in the sense that it requires the cooperation of the OCA, but it also, the Office of Court Administration, but it also will require some political muscle, and the political muscle at this end is to convince the state about a very fundamental problem that we have in this county, and that is the following. When they were doling out county court judges about 50 years ago, they did it long before that, but about 50 years ago, Tompkins County had about 66,000 people. We were given two county court judges. Chemung County, just to the south of us, Elmira, had about 100,000 people, and of course, Chemung County was given three county court level judges. What's happened in the last 50 years? Today, we have 105,000 people, still two county court judges. Chemung County has shrunk to 88,000 people, and they still have three county court level judges. Now, you may say, well, that's just the way it is. But it doesn't have to be the way it is. And I think there is some leverage there that ought to be exercised at the state level, in the legislature, and frankly in the Office of Court Administration, to convince it not to take away a judge from Chemung County. God knows we don't want to put them out of work. They need it down there. What we want is an extra judge up here. And we should have an extra judge up here. And that extra judge then can, through all of the mechanics that we've set forth in the report, ultimately it would free up a county court level judge who would then be made acting Supreme Court, who could then preside over the DWI part. So it's doable. The finances are such that it costs approximately $800,000 to fund a single judge position, if you include all of the support and space and everything else. The deferred savings, if you will, by going into this system from existing dollars, which is all out in the report, is only about a third of that, which would then require that we come up with the money somewhere else. It's state money. It ought to be state money. And it should not be forgotten that we currently generate, the towns and villages generate about $1.5 million in fees every year, of which we only get to keep locally about $500,000. The rest goes to the state. Almost $1 million of that goes to the state. There's no reason why we can't get an adjustment. So DWI part, county level, county political muscle must be exercised. What else can we do? One of the things we decided, because you'll see, we put a lot of time describing in our report that, in fact, there is a long history for the local courts in this, not only our jurisprudence, but in our common law history. Over 300 years, people have steadfastly insisted on the preservation of local towns and village courts. It has many, many good things. We have probably one of the best justice court systems in the country in certain respects. And God knows we have very, very dedicated justices in these courts today. We've seen them. These are smart people. These are engineers. These are lawyers. These are retired professors and on and on. They're good people. However, it becomes clear that if we are to render a system that is more even in the delivery of justice throughout the county, we need to figure out ways to set up a more centralized system. The one way of doing it, we can't do it under existing law just by fiat. It requires constitutional amendment. So the alternative strategy is to try to, what I call, bleed out. In other words, remove many of the complex cases, remove as many of the easy cases. In other words, remove from the justice court system a substantial portion of the caseload. What does that mean? Well, what it means is that as the caseload of the respective towns and villages shrinks, then there will be local incentive and motivation to pull the plug on some of these courts. We saw that already with the village courts. There are, in 1986, there were five village courts. Today, there are two, Freeville and Cougar Heights. Why? because of economics. And our point is that if we shrink the caseloads in the town and village courts, we will then shrink the demand for justices, demand for the courts, and it will then allow them or sufficiently motivate them to, in fact, consolidate under existing laws. And we've addressed that, actually, the final two pages of the report, pages 55 and 56. So how do we do that? Well, one is, if we bleed out all of the DWI cases and we set up this countywide DWI part, we've removed a good chunk of cases there. How else do we do it? We do it by this thing called LEAD, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion. What is that? That's a system where, again, county money used to help train local police forces. What do? They learn how to identify cases that should never be in the criminal justice system in the first place. They're more social work kinds of cases, and they identify these cases, and they divert these individuals. They never arrest them. Instead, they divert them to services, existing services. And by doing that, they are, in effect, bleeding those cases out of the system. How else do we do it? We do it with youth court, countywide youth court, something that Tompkins County almost was in the pilot years, way back in the 60s. Bill Shaw was one of the guys who was actually part of youth court when he was just a kid growing up in this community. It's a valuable resource. It's used in 15 other jurisdictions throughout New York State and other counties, and it works. And it's, again, a simple way whereby kids accused, instead of going into the system and coming out even with a mark saying, yes, the case was dismissed, or yes, it was YO, or yes, it was JD, the fact is there's a record there. And that hurts. It hurts kids when they go to school. They try to get into colleges. It hurts them when they try to get jobs. It hurts them when they do anything, try to get into the military, whatever. So youth court, another countywide system. That can be done under existing systems. And finally, we also talked about an after-hours centralized arraignment. Again, this is a way to consolidate, render more efficient the processing of arraignments. There are savings. It's all addressed in the report, how that works. For your edification, both the Senate and the House, or the Assembly, passed enabling legislation last session. It's sitting on the governor's desk for signature. The Attorney General most recently is encouraging the governor to sign it, so hopefully the governor will sign it. And then the county, you folks, can pass the legislation necessary to set up a centralized arraignment park. The other kinds of things are more voluntary, but they will require some help from you folks. What are they? And I'm talking now about the operational aspects of the local courts, things like electronic access. There's no reason why a court today cannot be accessible electronically 24/7. And the problem is simply setting up the systems. And that problem, of course, requires technology, requires training, requires money. We have those resources at the county level. Maureen Reynolds, our county clerk, is already in the vanguard of making that kind of stuff happen in the clerk's offices. There's no reason why we can't do the same kind of thing. And indeed, one of the points that Bill Chernish, Justice Chernish, pointed out was that in Newfield and Danby, they're already doing that because he understands the technology and has worked hard to implement it in his court. It can be done. Other things that can be done: coordinating the court schedules. TCOG should basically get an intern and figure this all out and come up with schedules so that assigned counsel folks are not required to be in Dryden the same night they're required to be in Ulysses, et cetera, et cetera. So you can do all that stuff. Other things to reduce some of the pressure on the jail, that there should be not just a presumption, but it should be pretty much the absolute rule that all first-time offenders accused of misdemeanors or less are released ROR. No reason. Bail is simply a function of ensuring that somebody returns to court. In this world of high technology, nobody can hide. There's no reason why we have bail and we have people sitting in bail in jail because they can't come up with $500 or $250 or whatever the number is. It's stupid. It costs a lot of money. Excuse the language. And then finally, I would suggest, we've got the justices, I think, on board, no more debtor's prison. Meaning that when people can't afford fines and surcharges, there is provision under the law today, simply enter judgment. No reason to go out and send our sheriffs out to arrest these people, bring them in, do an arraignment, put them in jail, punish them, et cetera. No. Most of the time, people don't pay because they don't have the money. enter a judgment. Someday they'll win the lottery. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. If they do, you'll get your money. If you don't, you'll never get it anyways. So don't put them in jail. No debtor's prison. There are other things. I don't want to get into it. I've already overstayed my welcome, but I'm just trying to give you a sense of the kinds of things that can be done to make our system more efficient and to give a more even sense of justice in this community. And now I'm going to kind of go to the aspirational model. The aspirational model for some of us is somewhat Brave New World-ish. I see the day, and I shudder when I even say it, because it goes against the grain of everything I stood for when I started out in the law 40 years ago. But I see the day of what I call black box justice at the low level. I'm talking about low-level misdemeanors, vehicle and traffic offenses, the stuff that really has no consequence outside of the individual and, frankly, the public purse. And I'm talking about if somebody gets a speeding ticket in Caroline, they ought to be able to go online, find out what the standard reduction is by going to the DA's website, seeing what it is, punching in a few pieces of data, and finding out, yes, I'm eligible for this reduction, punching a button saying I plead guilty, and the matter then goes to the court. The court does some kind of electronic review, determines that that's acceptable, says the fine's, you know, $150, whatever it is, and the person gets that email and then punches another button that debits their credit card or whatever mechanism of electronic payment they have, and they're done. They're done. They don't show up in court. They don't waste their time for hours sitting in the back waiting for their case to be called, sometimes having to come back a second time. The courts aren't burdened sitting there from 6 o'clock until 11 o'clock in the evenings of many days, on and on and on. That kind of what I call black box justice is doable. In fact, there are other counties. Seneca County, my God, has a better site for that type of. They've laid the foundation for that all the way up to DWIs. So other places do it, and we can do it too. And I'm hoping that there will be buy-in. I've already discussed this with both district attorney candidates, and I think they're both interested in trying to set up something along these lines. But this is something that we ought to be able to do community-wide. And, of course, then against that backdrop, because now you're bleeding out all of this junk out of the system. And once you bleed that out and now you can focus on the truly difficult, knotty misdemeanor cases where, frankly, the cases would hopefully be presided over in a single countywide misdemeanor court that would be able to deal with suppression issues and Huntley issues and discovery issues and sufficiency issues, all the stuff that lawyers do to make a living. And justice truly will be done in an even-handed way. So that's kind of where we're going. I'm very appreciative of the support that we've gotten from TCOG. I think TCOG embraced this report, and I hope we'll take it. I hope it doesn't gather dust on the shelf someplace. We all worked very, very hard. I go back to my beginning comments, and that is that we built this analysis on the backs and time of some very, very capable, knowledgeable, and hardworking people. And I think it's up to us now as a legislature and as a community to breathe life into these words in a way that makes them work for all of us throughout the community. So thank you very much.
Ray, we certainly would second, having attended, I can't say every one of the meetings, but a lot of those meetings, I was so impressed with the group that you've just spoken of, the assistance that Joe Mariana gave to you. The fact that we were doing this, when you say sua sponte, that means out of our own volition here in Tompkins County, to talk about something that we didn't have to talk about. And, congratulations to TCOG. And if we wouldn't have gotten this far without your leadership, and you've done a great job, and you certainly deserve the appellation distinguished. Are there other questions or comments?
I'll tell Mike that to Sigler. My grandchildren.
I just had two questions, because you had mentioned debtor's prison, and I was just wondering if, so this is the first question. do you envision child, I mean, a lot of men are going to jail for child support. So do you envision that kind of encompassing that? Like, we wouldn't be sending people to jail for child support or not?
Well, that's a different issue, because child support, there's been an adjudication that they haven't paid when they had the capacity to pay. And that's a different issue. In other words, they've gone through a due process. I think whether it's child support or whether it's a fine, I mean, we didn't go there with this analysis, but whether it's child support or whether it's a fine, if a person can't pay, they can't pay. It doesn't really matter what it is. You don't put people in jail because there's a judgment out there and they can't pay it.
Okay. And my other question was, I know you were talking about black box justice, and I'm just wondering, if we make it so easy just to accept a traffic ticket, wouldn't a body hard up for money just issue more tickets? I mean, we've seen that in several municipalities where they were just ticketing people because they needed the money.
Well,
I'm just wondering if we make it so easy, then...
Well, I mean, if a person violates the law and they get caught, then they, you know, they're subject to the reach of the law. I'm sure you haven't experienced this, but we are made aware of situations where some municipalities, not in this state but in other states, actually contract with third-party vendors who set up the cameras. They watch you zip by at 65 in a 55 zone. They take a picture of your license plate. They send that to you along with a bill saying you have a choice. We're going to charge you with this offense of speeding, 65 and a 55, and the minimum fine is $300, or you can pay $150 and avoid the fine, avoid the charge and avoid the points. I think most people write the check for $150 and they're done. My point is, will it encourage other entities? I don't know. I think it will. What it will do, though, is it will eliminate a lot of what I would call the nuisance of these kinds of charges and the aftermath, which I think is unnecessary. Yes.
Quick question.
Wait a minute. I've got a list here. If I could, please, Ray. Let's do Martha, Jim, Peter, Anna. Folks, try to keep your questions crisp and brief. And we've got Leslin and Carol.
Thanks, Ray. This is really important and really appreciate it. Now, aside from the fact that in Caroline you can't get online, you mentioned going online to pay your fine from the town of Caroline. What were there? You said people came with different points of view, and then you kind of worked through it and came to consensus. Devil's advocate, what were the opposing arguments? What's the kind of, aside from it'll cost more money in this or that way, what are the things that might be lost if some of these things would go forward?
Well, I think probably the most prominent opposing argument is the status quo. The status quo does work in some sense. I think there's this thing called grassroots justice that people, and by the way, I wasn't picking on Caroline. I was just using that. You could say that about Dryden, Enfield, Groton, all of them. The city of Ithaca, for that matter. The opposing view is we have 300 years of town and village justices who are elected by the people in that community, and therefore that person should be given the authority to be basically the god, if you will, of justice in that particular community. And it's a compelling argument in many respects. I think one of the points, though, that we learned was that in this area, especially in Tompkins County, so many of the people who are subject to that level of justice don't come from that community. They're people either passing through, or they're people who happen to move there or live there, they're renting or whatever. I mean, it's not as parochial as one would think.
And so if we were to essentially take the power away from elected officials, wouldn't that be subject to, we'd have to have a referendum on that?
Yeah, you can't, I'm going to be very clear. You cannot, if you read the report, the things that we are recommending, we are very clear about that which you can do without the cooperation of the local courts, and those things which truly do require the cooperation of the courts. It's all, it's, it, it's not easy. You're right. The Constitution protects the local towns and village justices and that system, as it should. And frankly, if we are going to make any kinds of changes, we need to make those changes constitutionally. But there, the things that we are recommending are things that can be done within that context.
Next, we have Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Ray. It's always good to hear you. My question is, what you talked about the third judge, and you talked about Tompkins County muscle, which is a strange thing. But how do we, what's our best move to get that kind of thing done?
I think I would recommend that the first thing would be to get the OCA on board. And I think the OCA, I can't speak for it, but I would think that a copy of our report along with a request, because there is an interest statewide to implement that kind of a model. And I think that this would be a good opportunity for OCA to say, yes, Tompkins County is a good place to try it out. And with that, there may be some support that can then be transformed into some financial support.
Peter Stein.
What scares me a little bit is listening to you talk. I wonder if I understand that there are limitations and that you can't do anything because it's all written into the Constitution, but suppose you didn't have those limitations and you were looking at a way of creating a new justice system in this county, for instance. You had that power to do that. It sounds to me like sort of a Brave New World kind of justice that you're talking about, where, you know, it's like when you pay for parking, you get a little ticket and then you go back later and then you put in your credit card and it takes out the money and that's over. And it sounds to me like you're saying that's a better way to do justice than the actual experience which I've had, getting a ticket and having to wait down there and being given a lecture to by a judge and telling me I ought to be a more careful driver or something like that. It seems to me there's some advantage to that instead of a more efficient computer way of pressing a button and deciding, what you're willing to do for a certain amount of money. I found it a little bit, disturbing. So I'm not complaining. I'm just saying what I was thinking when I was listening.
No, and frankly, when I wrote it, it was an interesting exercise in struggling with my own psyche about this. But I would emphasize simply two things. One, the task force was not unanimous on that point. The task force was split on that point. In other words, there are some people who saw that as where we ought to be heading, and there were others who were saying, no way, the experience that you are describing is exactly what ought to continue for all the reasons you've just described. The other piece, though, is simply we are not talking about crimes or offenses, really, that have a social import except by stretching. I mean, we're talking about what I would call the nuisance crimes, things like going too fast, things like not wearing your seatbelt. I mean, yeah, you can always stretch any one of these offenses into something that has social implications, but I'm suggesting that there is a level where in this era of expediency and people, communicate instantaneously and they move quickly and they accomplish things through clicks of buttons all the time, I think we are getting to a point where we expect, as a society, and especially our younger people, expect an instantaneous kind of cause and effect at so many levels. And I'm suggesting that this is one area where we can do it that is efficient and isn't going to cost society anything. I think there's a balance there.
Okay, I've got Anna, Leslin, and Carol. Then I'd sort of like to draw this discussion to a close. I know it's going to be a lot more discussion beyond this tonight, and this is just a primer up for us. Anna?
I definitely would love to hear further conversation, particularly potentially coming to the jail committee. And I don't see Rich here, but maybe that you brought up LEAD and you brought up a couple other programs that may really help us in pondering alternatives and creating a comprehensive plan. So that's a place I'd love to continue further conversation. And Peter actually brought up the crux of my thought, which is that my understanding of tickets in a lot of ways is for deterring future actions that are similar. And so I guess my first quick question on that, is there evidence or data that shows that these systems are deterrents enough?
I'm not sure. I mean, are there... I'm not aware of any studies. We certainly didn't come up with studies to support that particular point.
Mm-hmm. Given that that's the goal, of the ticketing, that might be interesting to see if there is any. And then the other thought I had, maybe just to ponder, and I'm absolutely in support. These are just thoughts that came up. In support of, you know, moving forward in efficiency measures, as long as, you know, we sort of think through these, which, again, I know you have thought through a lot of them, but the idea of sort of pay to play, you know, the wealthier you are, the more you can afford to speed, the more you can save your time. You know, there's this idea that it is also an income thing where, you know, you can't afford a ticket. Will it be an equitable?
Well, I think it's going to be no less equitable than what currently exists. People get tickets now and they're fine and they end up spending 2, 3, 4 hours. And frankly, many people can't afford the babysitters to sit in court from 6 to 9 at night. They can't afford the buses don't travel at that time, or their car isn't available, or who knows what the impositions are. So I think that many of these particular proposals will help people of lesser means. I mean, now I'm really out there, and the task force didn't even discuss this, but I suppose we could go to the Norwegian system, where you actually pay a fine based on your wealth. So, you know, the guy, I think the founder of Nokia, was given
not
a speeding
bad.
Ticket and fined, I think, $700,000 or $800,000 for that.
Well, I had just wanted to bring them up. I'm glad you obviously had already thought about a lot of them. So thank you for your input.
You're welcome.
Lesson.
Oh, Ray. Right. The Norwegian system, if we can only have that for taxes, wouldn't that be nice? I actually really had a simple question, and that is, where will the discussion happen that we can actually do some dissecting and talking more about this and planning for moving forward? That's all I wanted to know, because I read my 56 pages and would have read the appendices if you had given them to me and have little sticky notes everywhere. So where is it going to happen?
Joe, do you want to answer? When? Do you want me to answer?
Why don't you go?
First of all, we need to have the blessing from the Compton County Council of Governments, TCOG. Got to remember our acronyms, like you reminded us, the Office of Court Administration, OCA. Folks at home don't always remember our acronyms. But TCOG is our Council of Governments, and we really need their blessing to say to the county, why don't you move ahead with some of this, like the discussions with OCA, with the idea of what it would take to persuade them to have another judgeship, for example. Or this part of the part of court that would do the DWI, for example. So we get the blessing from TCOG, and then it's going to have to come to our committees, and probably through public safety, possibly through government operations, and maybe even to budget. But I think it would probably start at public safety.
Okay. Thank you for that. And do we have sort of any timeline, kind of, do we know? When does TCOG meet again? Do we have any idea?
I would think with the legislative session going to begin soon for the New York State, that probably the sooner we get to have it, the better.
Right.
I don't think we have an exact timeline. Do we?
Well, TCOG meets at the end of the month. I think it's the last Thursday of the month. And I know there's a resolution drafted for them to approve at that meeting, which would be that blessing that Mike referred to. So that'll be an important meeting, and I'm pretty sure, I'm looking at Michelle, that that's good to go for the meeting at the end of this month.
All right. Thank you for that.
Carol, our last question.
Well, yeah, I was going to go similar places to Leslin. I'll just maybe close this up by recommending, Ray, that everything you just said could be found in the 1960s in the lyrics. And I'm not trivializing. It's not. Talk about youth and how they're treated and drugs and who does drugs and who gets treated for them versus sent to jail. Who goes to debtor's prison? I'll find you lyrics. Who gets ROR and versus sent to jail? And it's not in the choruses, it's in the verses. And not only that, he didn't do it in 1,000 pages or 57. It's in a few lines. It's brilliant. So I recommend that you
we'll let you have the last.
Well, we're still at a high level. Ray, thank you so much for coming and sharing this with us.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you, Ray.
We have budget work to do tonight, yes. And I'm going to move to the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, and Jim Dennis.
Ah, thank you. What do you want me to do, Mike?
Well, I think we ought to talk about the budget itself and take the action to adopt the tentative budget that was
I'd be very happy
budget
to
committee
do that.
Voted last night. I'm just thinking there are a lot of folks here that are waiting to hear what we're going to do about that tonight.
Okay.
Is that all right with everyone?
Yeah, that would be fine. Let me begin by saying we got the budget from the county administrator first meeting in September, and we had a number of meetings in September, some here in October, voting meetings, to get to a tentative budget that I will be presenting to the legislature in a few minutes. And I just wanted to mention a few things that we dealt with during that budget. We put money involving child development, small amount of money. We have money set aside waiting for a plan for development of homeless initiative, dealing with reentry. Some of those kinds of things that would be good for us when we're petitioning the Commissioner of Corrections. We added a half-time librarian focused on technology, hopefully. We put some money into our housing strategy, waiting for a plan to come forward on that. We actually threw some money at electric cars, which was a first for Tompkins County. A big initiative will be involved with body cameras for deputies. We do not have them operating yet. We're working on a plan to get somebody to help us do that, store information, do all the things necessary to operate a system that works for everyone. We have some money involved in a college initiative program through OER. We have money involved, a good deal of money involved in energy navigators. I think $150,000 over a 3-year period. And we took care of some living wage things also. Doing all this, we started out with a budget. We have the county total budget is $173 million. It started in 2016, 171. It's about a $1.4 million increase, a 0.8% increase over that. We have an $84 million local budget that we are dealing with this year. And the way the system works, for the legislators all know, public sometimes doesn't know, but we have OTRs that are presented to us that are not covered in the county administrator's budget. And the things I mentioned were OTRs that have been voted on by the legislature in the voting meeting. So that's where we are right now. A tentative budget will be coming at you. The county administrator's budget was built at a 3% tax levy increase. The budget that we will be voting on is a 2.93 levy increase for 2017. So each percent of levy increase brings $460,000 to county government. So, you know, you do the math and you can figure out what that means. So at that point, or at this point, that's where we are. And if you would like me to move the tentative budget resolution, I would be very happy.
We need to go to Resolution L. That's the one in your packet,
yeah.
in your red folder.
It's the adoption of the amendments to the 2017 Tompkins County budget and 2017-21 capital program, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. Let's open it up for discussion.
There are numbers in that resolution, and it talks about a total tax levy of $48,029,942, an approximate tax levy increase of 2.93%, and a countywide average tax rate of $6.62 per thousand, a decrease of 1.53%. And this action would increase of an increase of $15.64 on a median price home assessed at $175,000.
Leslie.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that I heard you say this, Jim. So if this passes tonight, this is the budget that is going to the public hearing?
Yeah, I did not say that. You're right. This budget will be presented at the public hearing. That will be our tentative budget.
Tentative budget. Tentative meaning that there could still be amendments,
absolutely.
Changes, anything
absolutely.
To the budget, and I think that needs to be
right.
clarified. Thank you.
And And what Leslie says is correct, and I think I've repeated it a couple of times that we're not done until we're done, and that's the only thing I can tell you. So.
And, Jim, we will be setting the time for
yeah,
the public hearing tonight.
Yes, we will do that also.
Other comments on the budget? I know we were all here last night to talk about these things pretty thoroughly. Anyone else, or do you want to proceed to a vote?
Vote.
All right, let's move to a vote. We'll have a roll call, please.
Ms. Callis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
No.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Dooley Kiefer.
I'll change to yes for tonight, so it's unanimous to send this forward. It is not a budget I'm happy with.
Does anyone else want to change his or her vote?
Can I be a half yes? I was kind of limp last night. Never mind, Mr. Chair.
The clerk will announce the vote, please.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
And Rich is excused.
Thank you for that.
You want to do the one on the public hearing?
Yeah, sure. I have to pull that from the consent agenda. But what I'm
let's just go ahead and do it.
Okay.
Folks will know when the public hearing is.
I just did it. We're scheduling a public hearing on the 2017 Tompkins County budget and the 2017-2021 Tompkins County capital program, and I'm suggesting, if I'm remembering correctly, the date of November 1st, which is before it will be held at 5:30 prior to, well, after the beginning of the budget of the committee, yeah, legislature meeting. Am I right?
Are we okay with that? That's what's been proposed.
Right.
It wasn't on the original schedule that way.
Right.
It was on the original schedule for the 7th.
The day before election day.
And we felt it might suppress the turnout of folks that might want to come and speak. So we're trying to move it back at this point. Martha?
before there's a second.
Can you second it?
Yeah, I second it, but I would suggest.
Go ahead and speak.
Okay, I guess I thought last night at the budget meeting we talked about 7 or 7:30 as the set time so that people could still come after dinner or work.
I didn't mention it. It says 7 in here.
Right, because that was a standalone meeting. November 1st is a legislature meeting, which we would start at 5:30.
Oh, right, okay.
And so the point was if we set it, whatever we're doing, it's 7, let's say, stop that, just put a pause, and then go to the public hearing for the budget.
Will that work, Chair? And
we can make it work.
Okay.
If that's what the will of the body is.
Okay.
Okay, so, Carol, is it about the date or the time?
Well, I had a process question about whether we need to amend what was in our packets from the 7th.
Well,
I'm doing it now.
Okay.
So, Jim, could you restate then what the actual motion is?
The motion would be to establish it on November 1st, 2016 at 7 p.m.
It has been seconded. Is there further discussion on that? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you for that.
Okay, why don't we... is there anybody out there waiting for anything special that we ought to take up? Amy? Okay. All right, then let's go back to the agenda. Chair's report, I would just mention that the Bicentennial Commission did meet last week, and we have a lot of things in the fire. Please come to one of our meetings. The next one will be on November 16th, which is a Wednesday. We meet right here in Chambers. Come and see what some of the things we're talking about doing. We've ordered the signs now for the different towns, the markers, historic markers. We're talking about possibly doing a historic reading. We're talking about our presence in the Ithaca Festival Parade, possibly with a float. We're talking about historic brochures being updated for all the towns in the city. I can't mention all the things, but I want to let you know that the committee is busy and good people trying to do our best for to recognize this. I think we're going to have lapel pins, Marcia, fairly soon, and with our bicentennial logo on them. I have one appointment tonight. Oh, I'm sorry. That's on consent. I thought it was taken as a chair's appointment. So no chair's appointment. So we'll move next to the reports from the direct reports. Our county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. I had only one thing, but I'll add it. I'll add one more item to respond to Carol's question from earlier. The one item I had on the report was the jail study. I did send a note to the jail study committee yesterday, and I just wanted to inform the entire legislature that we're now entering the fast-track stage of the jail study process, not the study itself, but the process of selecting a consultant. The proposals are due back tomorrow. I don't know how many we will receive, but I do know that over a dozen consulting firms asked for copies of the RFP. I don't know how many will actually return them tomorrow, but we'll know soon. We need to move quickly because to be able to satisfy the Commission on Corrections, Commission of Corrections, we really need to have a consultant selected by the middle of November. So by your November 15th meeting of this full body, we should be selecting a consultant. So you can imagine that we need to move the selection process pretty quickly over the next few weeks. The selection committee itself will be large. It will be the entire jail study committee, which is 5 members, plus a representative of the sheriff's office, plus the commissioner of probation and myself. So it'll be an 8-person group. Hoping to meet early
to review the proposals, to filter them, to whittle them down to a couple of finalists, to then interview the finalists, and again by mid next month, it's only a month away, be able to select the consultant we feel would be best prepared to do the work that we've asked through the RFP. Work ideally will begin on December 1st. Now recall that we will be going back to the state. It's usually 45 days before the variance is to expire. We need to go back to the state 45 days before January 1st to let them know where we stand. And we've said that we expect to have a consultant in place. So that's what's driving these timelines. So I will continue to report to the full legislature on how we're doing, and again, we'll have a good representation on the selection committee. So that was the item I wanted to report on. The other I'd like to report on now, Carol asked me to talk about LGBTQ training that's currently underway. It is important for you to know that we have begun in earnest a broad-based approach to this training. Last Wednesday at our department head meeting, we devoted the entire session at the department head meeting to a training that's called Creating an Inclusive Workplace Culture for LGBTQ Employees, Customers, and Clients. And it was presented by Brian Pachowski and Luca Maurer, both of whom you know well from their positions at Cornell and Ithaca College and the work they've done in this area in the past in training in a large number of organizations within the county. That wasn't the be-all and end-all. That was really to elevate the competence level of department heads in this area, but also to get them thinking about how do we apply this on a broader base. In addition to that, DSS has retained Brian and Luca to do two trainings this year for a number of employees and for the rest of the employees the first quarter of next year. So DSS is being very aggressive in getting this training going within that. That's our largest department. And the other thing that's important, and again, we will be broadening this to other departments, it's important for you to know that the Sheriff's Office is also taking a leadership role here. And I'm reading from an email that Ken Lansing sent to folks who were asking about this, who noted that Brian Pachowski and Luca Maurer have volunteered their time and expertise in assisting us with the training and providing the necessary policies that would aid us in approaching and communicating with the LGBTQ community. So I do want you to know that we are moving forward, I think, very progressively on that front, and we'll be doing more broad-based training in the coming months. So that's my
question. Martha.
Thanks. Those plans sound good. I'm curious about the jail study committee and the review of the RFP. Sounds like we'll have to do a special meeting or two. I mean,
The full legislature won't. The jail study committee might need to. Okay. I think the committee may meet on the 14th, but I could well have my dates wrong. I think committee members are going to need to be flexible over the next few weeks as we go through the stack of proposals and whittle them down to the two or three finalists.
I mean, if we have to, the jail study committee meets November 17th, this week, and then November 17th.
17th, so we'd have to.
Which is after we're supposed to have already told the commission, right?
Yeah, so in the timetable in the RFP itself, it has the committee meeting on the 14th of November, and then that recommendation coming to this body on the 15th of November. So that would need a special meeting.
Thanks.
Okay, shall we move on? Bill Troy is sitting in tonight for Jonathan Wood.
I have nothing to report from the county attorney.
Well, taking up space anyway. We're glad to have you, Bill. Thank you for being at our meeting. Rick Snyder.
I do not have a report for tonight either. Neither do I.
All right. Thank you, Rick. Any questions for either of them? Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Jim?
I withdrew the one that I was going to withdraw on the consent agenda. Oh, I'm sorry. Forget it.
Stop. Oh, okay. All right. Let's go to consent. Oh, I'm sorry.
I was handed not the yellow version. I'm not sure if this is Peter or Rich. The Black Creek Integrated Systems for the jail. Was that had to be added?
No. No, that's for the public safety meeting on Thursday.
Okay, I'm sorry.
We don't want to miss something, so it's good to ask. Let's go to our consent agenda then, please. And I do have an appointment there. Out of the Office for the Aging, we have Patty Stamm to be appointed to the office. Let's go to the resolutions on consent. From the Government Operations Committee, Resolution A, authorizing a public hearing on proposed Local Law F of 2016, a local law enacting the New York State Real Property Tax Law Section 467-J, restricted sale price exemption for housing trust houses. That's ID 6620. Out of Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution B, authorization to execute a supplemental agreement with Delta Engineers for bridge replacement design services, Game Farm Road, County Route 173 over Cascadilla Creek. That's Dryden, Ithaca. That's ID 6602. Resolution C, award of bid, Tompkins County Recycling Facility Upgrade Project. That's ID 6605. We already did D. Out of Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution E, budget adjustment for revenue increase for the Older Americans Act Title III-B funding for the Office for the Office for the Aging, ID 6391. And there is a revised version of that in your packet. So that's the one we'll have on the consent agenda.
So I'm sorry, Mike. Does anybody remember what Jonathan told me about whether I need to recuse myself on the real property tax law item? I don't think I need
to
recuse myself
on
this. Okay.
All right. Are we ready to vote on the consent agenda? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Motion.
Oh, we need a motion. I'm sorry. Before we vote, motion by Dave, seconded by Leslin. Now we vote. All in favor? Those opposed? That's unanimous. Okay, we'll go to the Health and Human Services Committee. Leslin McBean, Chairborn. Leslin McBean, Chairborn is the Claire. Huh? No, Leslin McBean, Claireborn is the chair
of the
Health and Human Services
Committee. I like some of what you have behind your desk. That sounds good. Whatever's going on there, I'd like some. We met yesterday. We had a very engaged meeting. We spent most of our meeting, the Office of Human Rights was the final department that reports to HHS that we had an opportunity to review. We'd been reviewing departments throughout this year. Some of them very specific aspects because they're just too large to do it all at once. so we've done Health Department, we've done DSS, we've done Youth Services, as well as some specific things for those departments. And so Human Rights was our next department up for review, and that occurred yesterday. We spent a lot of time trying to understand the functions of the office. Karen Beer, the director of the office, and Xavier Rush, who is a paralegal in the office, did a PowerPoint presentation for us on particularly the education and outreach aspects of the office and many of the things they've been doing around education and outreach. From the poster contest to the art contest to some of the presentations they have done. So a great deal of their time from the presentation is spent on education and outreach to landlords and tenants association, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We also had an opportunity to get into enforcement powers for the office and begin that discussion. Obviously, we're not finished with this yet, but we got into discussion around enforcement powers. one of the things that the director was asked to do, I don't know how long that was, when she came on board, was for us to think about what needs to happen for us to be able to enforce human rights law here in Tompkins County. We had a memo of understanding with the state, a cooperative agreement called with the federal government, that was not renewed somewhere around 07, 08. We lost that. And so we, at that time, prior to that, us losing that, we were, the memo we had allowed us to both do intake and investigation. The state offers two kinds of agreements. An intake agreement where you can do as a local human rights office, you are allowed to do intake, or an intake and investigative agreement. I can't say that word fast. Agreement. We had the latter.
That same trouble.
We had the latter of the two. And then it lapsed. So when Karen came on board, one of the things we talked about is perhaps we look at getting our own local law, which will give us those enforcement powers. We also talked about revisiting with the state, having a renewed MOU. Now, there aren't many counties that the state had MOUs with. They pretty much just about everybody's was gone. And the state recently had began to sort of renegotiate with counties the MOU. And I think Rockland County was probably the last one to get theirs back in either 2013 or 2014. I don't remember the exact year. So the state has been looking at this. So fortunate for us, it's a ripe time. So the presentation from Karen and Xavier sort of outlined for us three options in which we can engage in terms of enforce, we can pursue for enforcement powers. One was our own local law, which she presented to us a draft. Committee members had just got it within the 24 hours before the meeting and didn't have time to really read it and dissect it, and we'll have that opportunity. Two was pursuing the MOU with the state, and conversations have already begun with the state around that. And three was pursuing a cooperative agreement with the federal government, with HUD and EEOC. But in order for us to get a cooperative agreement, we have to have a local law. So, you know, the third one depends on having number one, which was the local law. So that was part of the presentation. On our agenda, we also wanted to have the opportunity to speak some more about statewide source of income or source of income as a protection. I don't remember what the terminology is. It is a coalition that our Office of Human Rights has gotten involved. It's a statewide coalition they've gotten involved in. Karen explained to us that there haven't been that many meetings. There might have been one or two meetings. They're just sort of getting off the ground. You know, things around that certainly will amount to policy decisions by this body, so I'm sure those things will come back. So that's being put off for a later date. We will pursue more conversation around the law. Our own local law will dissect the draft that Karen gave to us, provided us with, that she had put together at, I think, in starting in our November meeting. It's a lot. We just couldn't do it all in one meeting, and like I said, we just gotten it. So we'll take it in sections, sort of look at it, see what is relevant to Tompkins County, what may not be, because we're a unique animal here in Tompkins County. Before anyone else had anything that's protecting gender identity and expression, Tompkins County did, and so we're very proud of that. So so we will continue to work on this, just to give you a heads up on that. The conversation with the state, one does not know. But at least the door is open for conversation. They said they've been looking at Tompkins County, like I said, because, you know, woo-hoo, we're model citizens over here. and great in terms of upholding the law and protecting people's human rights. And so we hope that that conversation will happen quickly so that we can look at where do we sign on the line to get that MOU back. We don't know. It's state processes. These things take time. I know some of their interests at the state had to do, which Karen had shared with us also, because she had been involved in conversations with the state, had to do with, you know, our capacity in the office. They know that we used to have enough staff and the right level of staffing to be able to carry out those investigations. They wanted to make sure that we still have those things in place, that we have the capacity for staff to go to the trainings. If you remember in Karen's budget presentation, one of the things that she asked for was over target requests for training for enforcement within staff. Those are things that the state is looking at to make sure that we'll be ready for something like this. So there's no telling when may or may not happen. We don't know. But we will pursue the conversation with them. We also spent a little more time just sort of understanding even better what numbers, who comes into the office, what for. How do we get the statistics? Karen let us know that one of the things that they struggle with is getting that information because they have to wait until the state has sort of filed, put their things in the proper place to see what numbers came out of Tompkins County. So basically, those are numbers of cases that were filed with the state, not necessarily having come through our local office. So they will provide us, they're going to go back, look at their files, and provide us at the next meeting with the numbers that actually came through our office that they assisted people with filing with the state. What they gather from the state are numbers of cases that were filed out of Tompkins County. People might have filed them directly with the state, but not necessarily gone through our office, or they might be some overlapping of some of those cases. So we are... hopefully at our next meeting be able to get those responses about actually what happens in our office, who comes through, how do we track it, et cetera, et cetera. And, that was the bulk of our meeting. I don't think there's anything I missed, but as always, I ask my fellow committee members to please fill in any gaps that I might have missed. So the discussion continues next month. Around human rights. We had some other things we were going to have on our agenda, but this seems like a priority for us and a priority for the community based on a number of community members who came out here to speak during budget about the importance of the office to them. People always come out to say, you know, we've had a human rights office. We want to preserve the office. So we'll continue this conversation to see what our next steps are. So... that's it.
Questions? Dooley.
Thank you for the comprehensive report. After you enumerated the three options that your visitors provided, you made reference to some statewide coalition, and I did not understand that.
So the Office of Human Rights has joined our members or participate, let me say it that way, and the statewide source of income coalition. So one of the things that Karen will talk more about at our next meeting is what the source of income mean. So this coalition is coordinated by Erase Racism and comprised of organizations and businesses across New York State that are supporting an amendment to the New York State Human Rights Law to expand the protected classes to include lawful sources of income, such as wages and salaries, and federal, state, local, corporate, or nonprofit assistance payments or subsidies. And this is particularly, I think, relevant to housing discrimination. So people now have to state, you know, where you're going to get the money to pay your portion of the rent kind of thing. So that's just my Cliff Notes version of it. I'm sure when we hear from Karen, we hear a whole lot more. So our Office of Human Rights have been participating with this because they feel that that's an area that the human rights law should be changed in. And as I said earlier, there weren't that many meetings. I think it's just getting off the ground.
Thank you.
But we did talk about those kinds of things being more discussion policy-wide for us. But is that an area for us?
Yeah.
Carol?
Yeah, so just on that last one, that was an excellent lesson.
I don't get to talk much, so I try to be thorough.
Well, it was just a great summary of the meeting. It was thorough, so I appreciate it. On that last item, I think the sources of income has to do with, it's not necessarily that somebody who is renting an apartment doesn't have the right to understand whether you're going to be able to pay the rent. It's whether things like housing vouchers,
yes,
can be turned down as a
yes,
portion of that, right? Yeah.
Right, and that's okay. Why I said those were my Cliff Notes version.
Yeah.
We will have a more comprehensive discussion at our next meeting or the following meeting, and we'll be able to share more information with you or invite our human rights director to come talk to us.
Martha?
Yeah, this conversation about the source of income for housing made me wonder whether it is legal for zoning requirements, say, to specify that the housing in this area has to be owner-occupied.
Mm.
Or does zoning have an exterior, you know, a form purpose, or which says it has to be no more than two stories and that sort of thing? But do you know anything about
that? There's our deputy county attorney.
Would
he might be able to answer
Bill
that question.
Bill, you need to use your microphone.
Or a chair.
I do not know the answer to that off the top of my head, but I'd be happy to get back to you and look at it.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to know. I mean, we hear about zoning all the time, or people asking for such and such a place to be owner-occupied only, so I wasn't sure. All right, thank you.
I can make it up if you'd like, but...
I could, too.
You're experts.
Thanks, I'd appreciate hearing back.
All right.
Thank you all. That was our meeting. We will meet again on, I have no idea what the date is, but the third Monday in November. We meet the third Monday at 3:30 in the afternoon, and that will be November 21st. So, yes.
Okay, folks, I need your help. It's 7:30. We normally take a break now. We've got someone coming at 8 o'clock from out of area for our executive session. I'd sort of like to get through the rest of our agenda in the next 30 minutes. We've got to do these bond resolutions. Maybe we can waive the chair's reports unless there's really something that someone needs to tell us about for sure. So I think I'm going back to Jim right now and ask you to take your resolutions.
Okay, I'm ready.
We have to have a roll call on all of these folks.
Are they full or short form?
Full roll call.
Damn. Okay. Resolution F, and Rich is here to, you know, talk about these. A bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $1,487,000 in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of repairing and or replacing the Ludlowville Road Bridge, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn. Discussion? Dooley?
Would it be... I would like to amend it to include the town, the location where the bridge is in Line 10, the Ludlowville Road Bridge in the town of Lansing.
Does that work for...
It's
That's fine.
I can't see as that would really change the resolution.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Joe?
Joe?
Yeah, if I could just make one note on this, and it's the only note I think we need to make. The timing of what we're doing here tonight has a lot of projects that have already been approved in last year's capital program coming forward now for bond resolution. There's one that is anticipatory. It's a part of the 2017 budget that you've just moved through the tentative process. It's the Ludlowville Road Bridge. So that's a part of the 2017 capital program. So you haven't really adopted that yet, and you won't until the middle of November. So this one we just wanted to flag. It's anticipatory. It assumes that you will approve this as a part of the capital plan for next year. If you don't, if you decide before the middle part of November, you don't like it, you don't want to do it, you want to take it out of the plan, Rick simply won't exercise the authority. We may even come back and rescind the authorization. So I just wanted to flag that, and it's the only, I think, exception to the rule that all the other projects have been approved in a prior capital program.
From a law point of view, does it matter that we put the town in? I mean, most of these are prepared by the bond attorney, right?
I'll speak to it. I do have to run every correction by the bond attorney because they've already signed off, and they have the permanent feature for the – that's part of the operating – the official statement. That's already in process, so we have to pull it from the FAA's official statement, and we have to get it officially noted with the bond attorney. It can be done if it's important to you all. But it's not just a matter of me making a change and getting it to Kathy. This right. one has to go through the attorney. We'll have to spend money to do
so
it.
So I take it that's not friendly?
It is not friendly.
Okay. I guess, Dooley, you've heard what the effect would be if you move this forward. Dooley?
Yes. There are two resolutions that deal with bridges that are in specific towns as opposed to the resolution that deals with lots of bridges throughout the county. I was going to make the same suggestion for each, and I would ask that, not that it be accepted as friendly, but that the query be put to bond council if it's acceptable to add the location of the bridge, the municipality it's in, and if they say it's okay, then I hope that it could be done. There are two other things about this resolution which I'm going to mention. One is, well, three. Section 1, line 20. Section 3, line 30, and Section 4, line 37, they have redundant language that has crept back in, which had been removed a couple of years ago, and now it's here again. I will point out that line 17 and 18 say the county determines as follows, and then those three places I mentioned duplicates the word determines. So those should be struck. I don't think bond council will have any problem with that, and I've pointed this out to our legislative clerk, and she usually catches those things before they get printed.
Is it all right with the group if Rick talks to bond council about that?
Yes, from my point of view.
Okay. All right. Can we move ahead then? I'm sorry, Dan had his hand up.
I was hoping to get a clarification of what Joe was saying about whether, with the exception of this one, that these have been approved. Does that mean we will never see these again? These will just happen? Or we still have to approve them before they actually happen?
So you've approved them in the capital program. So you approved the budget. Just like you're approving the operating expenses, you're approving a capital program. So you said these projects are a go. As elements come forward, as the selection of engineers, as the awarding of the bids, those kinds of, you'll still be involved in those parts of the project.
Thank you.
Will and Carol?
Well, on that point, the one having to do with the health department, which was the driveway upgrade, yeah. As we know, there have been some issues in terms of whether or not the bus would want to make that route, and so it might not be worth doing. Where's the decision point in that particular project?
I think it's very similar to Ludlowville. If TCAT digs in and says they won't bring a bus down there, we will not borrow the money and do this improvement. We'll very likely come back and ask for this to be rescinded. Now, there are conversations underway right now at the board level about whether they want to approve it or not. And if they do approve it, I think they're going to want us to wait to make the physical improvements until they see how it's going. So timing, it's going to get a little fuzzy. So what we're asking for is to have the authority to borrow this money, but Rick won't borrow it until we're sure that it's a go.
Thank you.
Carol?
So back many years ago, we devised a policy about how to schedule the upgrading of our roads. And we were always, and so, you know, each road is rated and looked at for traffic numbers. And when you get below a certain number, it gets put on the list. And I think the intention was always there to do a similar thing for bridges. My question is whether we have anywhere on our radar screen proceeding to figure out how to do that.
Well, this is a conversation for the capital budget process. But if you look at the information that was presented in the capital budget in the budget document. If you're talking about Ludlowville, you'll find that we've got the bridge rating in there. We've got the 4.3 rating in there, so the legislature can see that. I guess, Carol, what I'd also say, with the exception of Ludlowville, these have been green-lighted, and now it's a matter of getting the money to pay for them.
Okay, we're ready to vote?
I understand that.
Let's have a roll call, please.
Ms. Callis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes, assuming the changes are acceptable to bond council.
You've got to vote either yes or no.
Yeah.
Yes, well, pass me for the moment.
All right. Please proceed.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Jock?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Does anyone want to change her or his vote? Please announce the vote.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Let's go to G.
Resolution G, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $600,000 in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, pay a portion of the cost of repairing and or replacing the South George Road Bridge, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave. Discussion? Carol?
Can anybody refresh my memory on the traffic counts on across this bridge?
No. I'm guessing not right now.
I don't know.
We can probably get back to
you. Does anyone know the traffic count on this bridge?
No.
I don't think so. Dooley?
yes, I don't think it's a very heavily traveled one. This is another resolution where I'd like to add the location of the bridge and the same comments about the language that has crept back in here. Duplicative determination language. I'm mentioning it just for the record so that when Rick makes his inquiries, this will get answered to.
All right. It's in my district, and I believe it's used regularly by people. I travel over it on a regular basis. Yeah. It's not like a – it would be much higher count than something like, say, Red Mill Road Bridge. Carol?
Well, actually, I can wait until after Julie gets her question about the wording changes. No? Okay. Refresh my memory on whether this is one of the bridges where we're doing two within less than a half of a mile from each other, or the one where we already spent money putting the temporary bridge?
No.
Okay.
That's Groton.
Thank you. Which one is that? Groton?
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
0 for 2.
No. We're ready to. All right, let's go ahead with the vote then.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson? Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Announce the vote.
13 ayes. One person temporarily out of the room.
All right, let's go to H.
A bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $1 million in serial bonds and notes of the county, New York, of the county, Tompkins County, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of road and highway system reconstruction improvements to various locations throughout the county. And I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Glenn. Discussion? Dooley?
I want to thank the drafters for clarifying in line 10 that none of these involve the addition of new travel lanes. And I will point out that Section 3 and Section 4 in this resolution again have the duplicative determination language so that Rick can inquire about that.
Jim?
I'm sorry to bring this up, but in the second big headline there, at the name of this resolution, the name of the county is not there. So you insert your own county, whichever one you want. You see it? It says notes of the county, comma, New York.
Good catch.
That struck me.
Martha was out of the room on a mission of necessity. Martha, do you want to be recorded on Resolution G?
I'm fine with it. That's a yes.
That's a yes.
Rich, may I, Rick, I mean, obviously the resolution has Tompkins in it at the bond council, right? Okay, good enough. Thank you.
All right, let's vote.
Ms. Callis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Anyone want to change his or her vote? Announce the vote, please.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Resolution I, bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $200,000 in serial bonds and notes of the county of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of repairing and or replacing certain existing bridges located within the county. And I will move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave. Discussion? Dooley?
Again, lines 30 and 37 include the duplicative language I mentioned, so Rick can clarify that.
Okay. Ready to vote? Call the roll, please.
Ms. Callis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
J, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $500,000 serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of a capital improvement project at the County Health Department building. And I would move that.
Seconded by Anna. Discussion? Dooley?
I have a silly question. Is that in the village of Lansing or the town of Ithaca?
What?
Our health department.
I think it's in the village. I believe it's in the village of Lansing.
I think it is, too, but
I can't be certain.
But line 11 puts it in Ithaca. So that should be checked and corrected. And again, sections 3 and 4 have the extra language.
Okay. Ready to vote?
We have the districts in our budget book.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Anyone want to change her or his vote?
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Item K, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $900,000 in serial bonds and notes to the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of various capital improvement projects at various county facilities, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Second by Glenn. Any discussion on that one? Dooley?
There are just a couple of places where the word FOR is missing. It's on page 32 of our packet, line 1 and line 5.
Ready to vote?
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yeah.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
I've been waiting to do this. We.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Okay, we got through those. All right, let's go back.
Thank you very much for that. Mike, we made it through.
All right, let's. The clerk reminds me we have item 15, the unfinished business. We have the authorizing a public hearing on proposal. Dooley?
I also was asked to give a presentation explaining the changes to the charter today, so I'm prepared to do that, but it's going to take more than 1 minute.
Well, if we're going to, are we going to push this over the public hearing? Can this wait for next meeting?
That's up to my colleagues.
What does the group, what would the group like to do? Martha?
Once this is resolution ID 194, packet page 45, once it's moved, I'm going to move to change the public hearing from November 1st to December. Wait, November 18th?
November 15th.
November 15th. So,
wait. From what to what?
Does the group want to hear a presentation from Dooley tonight?
In which case, we could have that presentation
on
November 1st. What?
Yeah.
Find the postponement.
Well, not with me, it isn't.
I'm just saying time-wise.
Dooley, you asked.
Did I finish my sentence? If we can move the right now, the public hearing is shown as November 1st. I think since we have the budget and everything else we've been doing, November 15th is preferable, but still allows us to approve it and get it to New York State for their approval before the end of the calendar year. So I was hoping we would get this moved to the 15th, which would allow November 1st for your presentation.
Carol, let me take Dooley and then come back to you, because she's sort of responding to Martha.
I support moving it to the 15th. That's not a problem. I confess that I took this afternoon to prepare this summary because I was strongly urged to make this presentation sooner rather than later. So I missed the MPO meeting this afternoon, so I'm feeling guilty, doubly guilty. But guilt is good.
Carol?
This is on this topic, if you don't mind. I am one of the people who had asked that we have the chance to hear more about the charter changes before we were at the meeting where we're moving it to public hearing, in case there are questions that we have or things that we think need more thought. that we want to go come back and think about more carefully, or that we think program committees ought to look at. And we have a very long meeting, potentially on November 1st. So if we think we're tired now.
So you're asking for the presentation tonight?
I'd rather have it tonight, although we might want to have is there a reason why we can't take a break and then have
well,
it?
We have somebody come at 8 o'clock for executive session.
Oh, yes.
Okay,
we can't
I see.
Do it tonight.
Well, could we do it after the executive session?
Well, then we'll have to shut down and then come back on.
No, let's not do that tonight.
All right, so okay. Carol would like to have the presentation tonight. How do the rest of you feel? Jim?
No.
How many want, let me just see a straw vote here. How many would want to see hear the presentation tonight? All right, sounds like, Dooley, they want to see you postpone it. In deference to what you did, I think that we certainly owe you a little bit of an apology here for... And thank you for preparing, but maybe you could be even better prepared next time.
No, it's not going to be a PowerPoint. Don't worry.
Thank you. Yes, Carol?
Well, then can I ask that we consider, that the committee consider whether we could hear about this on November 15th and bring it to public hearing at the first meeting in December, if that would work, or something, so that we hear about it in advance of having to decide whether to move it, we're ready to move it forward. Just consider it. You don't have to answer it.
Will?
So our expected speaker is yet to arrive. Do we have any reason to believe that he will be here at 8?
I believe he'll be here.
Okay. And I guess the question for Dooley was how long you need to do this justice.
Maybe 5 minutes. I can do, I thought 10 minutes, but I can probably do it in five.
Let's go ahead then.
That being the case, I guess I would encourage us to do it tonight.
Well, we already had a straw vote, and we didn't have enough wanted to do it tonight.
Well, 5 or 10 minutes, that's fine. If we just, let's just go. I mean,
can we start tonight, please? I'm fine getting it started tonight.
All right. Go ahead, Dooley.
New York State has 57 counties outside of New York City. 34 of them abide by municipal home rule law. 28 of them are charter counties, 18 with elected county executives. There are only 5 like Tompkins County with appointed county administrators. In 1996, our Charter Review Committee, chaired by Mike Lane, with Charlie Evans, Tim Joseph, Tom Todd, and me, recommended leaving the DA elective, but changing to an appointed county clerk and county sheriff. I brought that page of recommendations to read to you. I will skip that tonight. It's really interesting. Our present charter was adopted in 1968 at the end of the year. It was effective on January 1st, 1970, and it stayed relatively unchanged from then till now, except that the Board of Representatives morphed into the legislature, and we went from 15 to 14 members fairly recently. The present Charter Review Committee started in February of 2014. With Mike Lane as chair, I was vice chair, and Kathy Liz Herrera, Dan Klein, and Peter Stein. When Kathy Liz resigned, it continued as a four-person committee, but it's been going for a long time. Our process involved us taking turns reading the document aloud, so we had to concentrate on it. We had to listen to it. We could pick up things that needed clarification. We could pick up grammatical errors. A lot of the changes that got made flowed from that process. Marcia Lynch attended every meeting, as did our county administrator, almost every. The county attorney was often in attendance. Our charter articles are organized by either topic or department, with a catch-all article at the end for little things. Each department head was invited to propose changes to the committee, to attend the meeting when that part of the charter was being discussed. To keep things going, when we had misgivings or unanswered questions, we developed a process of revisits. And Kathy Covert did heroic work keeping track of our many revisits. Not all decisions were unanimous. I'll give you one example. Our county planning commissioner came to the charter review committee a couple of years ago. In the 2 years since then, he came to just about our last meeting this year with a request that his title be changed from planning commissioner to commissioner of planning and sustainability. And that passed with a 3-1 vote. As I said, not all of our decisions were unanimous. I have a list of notable changes, which I'll read. Well, the first one is that we renamed two departments. Personnel became human resources. That was by a 3-1 vote. Planning became planning and sustainability. That was by a 3-1 vote. Second big change, we split the public works department, granting the four divisions department status. That was, again, by a 3-1 vote. And solid waste division changed its name. It's the Department of Recycling and Materials Management. A third important change, we formally incorporated the independent redistricting process by using an independent redistricting commission. And that was a 4-0 vote. A fourth major change was addressing the timing of special elections to fill vacancies. And that's limited by state law, but we allowed a bit more time for candidates to organize and public to become informed, and that was a 4-0 vote. A fourth major change updated Workforce Development Office to align with the changed federal law. That was a 4-0 vote. A fifth major change was totally removing the authority of the Mental Health Services Board to decide on the new mental health commissioner. The language, which had been in the charter since its inception and which tracked state law for non-charter counties and which had never raised a problem until recent years when the administrator recommended a combination of public health with mental health under the public health director for a 3-year trial. And that change was made by a 3-1 vote. And there's one noticeable non-change. We raised the issue again of an appointed professional sheriff because the timing was propitious, with the present sheriff electing or intending not to run again. But due to some legislators feeling they needed more time to consider this issue and recognizing that such a change, which diminishes the power of an elected official, would require a mandatory referendum, we've postponed this from 2016 consideration, and that was by a 2-2 vote, so it's not included. And that's the end of my quick version. I hope that helped Martha and Carol.
I'm not going to take questions unless somebody is just burning. Anna?
Question for you, process-wise. If there are any of those items, which are, you're considering major items, that anyone on the legislature would like to see changed, and it goes to a public hearing, if it's changed after that, do we need another public hearing for any of those?
Yes.
That is the case.
Yes. If it's a substantive change, we would need a second public hearing, which isn't unheard of. We've done that before. Leslie?
So the opportunity will exist at our following meeting for us to be able to ask questions and add amendments or anything like that?
That's correct.
Thank you.
We would be voting on the whole charter, so it would have to, the resolution to adopt it would be amendable.
Thank you.
And I hope that you all have the time to read it between now and then if you haven't already.
Carol?
So we have the chance to ask them about it, if there are any, in a generic way, are there any changes that were recommended by
the committee that are in here, in which the department head registered concerns about what the committee decided to do?
Any.
Okay, and they all had the opportunity to see their own sections.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, may I ask just one other quick follow-up?
Yes.
Dooley, just as an example, personnel change to HR, name of department, did we also look at, and this yes or no, sort of the duties and responsibilities in the charter?
Oh, yes.
That falls on the HR, and there were some changes made there as well?
Offhand, I don't remember.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay. Dooley, thank you very much. Thank you for your preparation.
Sure, thanks.
I'm going to take the minutes now. I want to get them passed. Someone want to move them? Dan?
No, I had a question. I'm just, so are we not scheduling a public hearing tonight then? Did they get moved or not moved? I'm just trying to get the process.
That's right. Bring me back to square one here. You're exactly right. We were going to move that to Dooley. You want to move your resolution scheduling? We have to lift it from the table.
It had been tabled. It needs to be lifted off the table.
Someone want to move to lift it off the table? That's Anna. Is there a second? Seconded by Leslin. Any discussion on lifting it from the table? Yes, Carol.
Well, I had a bunch more questions that I refrained from asking here because we were going to wait until our next meeting, but we're going to hear about it now.
What we're going to be doing is scheduling a public hearing.
Well, yeah, I understand that. But I had questions like this. There's a lot of littler things in here that we're asked not to go into tonight. I can go into them now if you want us to vote on this.
But move a second to bring it off the table.
Do we have a Department of Veterans Affairs?
Yes.
We have one?
We don't have a department of it, but we support a veterans officer.
Which is where?
Is this relevant to whether?
Well, yeah, because there's a lot of things.
All right, we've got a motion on the table to lift it from the table.
Ready to lift it off the table.
All right, all in favor of lifting it off the table, please raise your hand. Those opposed to lifting it. We have two opposed, Mike Sigler and Carol. All right, now we can move, Dooley, you can move the authorization to set a public hearing.
If I could find it.
Back to page 45.
Thank you. Is the resolution 2016-194? Is that the ID number?
No, the ID is 6585. But it is the resolution number is 2016-194, correct?
Authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law number E of 2016, amending the Tompkins County Charter. I'll move it.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna.
And the changes to the resolution? Is that
Martha wanted to propose a different date. Martha, you want to propose an amendment?
I'd like to move on line 9 that the date be November 15th instead of November 1st.
Is that friendly?
Yes.
Is it friendly to the seconder? Okay. So now we're voting on this resolution setting the public hearing for the 15th of November.
If I could suggest amending, I guess I don't have a version with line numbers. It's the first whereas, it's the second line. Multiple changes that update, get rid of the S, and reflect current language and practice. So it changes.
Any objection to that, folks? Okay, shall we vote on setting the public hearing then? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? I have one opposed. Carol. All right.
So Mike, excuse me, if you're worried about our not having time to discuss this fully at a legislature meeting, I'm willing to meet with individual legislators to try to clarify things.
Thank you.
But I think it would be good to do it at a legislative meeting.
I thought that was the idea behind moving it.
the public hearing later, that we'll have an opportunity for that? Oh, okay. Otherwise, I wouldn't have voted for it.
But it would mean the next legislative meeting.
Okay, now we're going to move the minutes. Who wants to move them? Leslin, seconded by Rich. Discussion? All in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. Are there any standing committee reports that can't wait to be had? All right. Then I'm going to ask for a vote to go into executive session. We've actually got three topics. The first topic has to do with contract negotiations, the second with real estate purchase, and the third with a personnel issue with respect to a particular person. Do I get a motion to go into executive session?
Do we expect action?
No, we don't expect to take any action when we come out. Been moved by Anna, seconded by Peter. All in favor of going to executive session, please raise your hand. Those opposed? Okay, we'll take a few minutes to have a break and shut down, and then we'll come back together.